Everyone, welcome. It's Naomi Wolf, and once again, I have a fantastic treat for you all, the wonderful Charlotte Walker. Welcome, Charlotte.
Naomi, thank you very much, and welcome to everybody as well.
So, yeah, fun to be here. It's wonderful to have you. You're talking to a lot of your fans here in the Daily Cloud community and the larger community. Charlotte Walker, as many of you know, is our valued advisor at Daily Cloud on all things technology and a venture specialist, and has a long history advising startups and growing products and companies. And she also has established a real valued niche for herself and for her fans by reading the most difficult bills, especially the stimulus bills, and explaining them. So I asked Ms. Walker, and she kindly volunteered to talk today about the latest act, the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. So let's just get going. I'm going to dive right into it. And again, thank you so much for doing this. What is different, Charlotte, with this bill versus the CARES Act and the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, the two bills you've already broken down and discussed?
Well, as someone who has not really looked at a lot of legislation over the years, but more recently, quite intensely, the first thing that came to mind when I read the American Rescue Plan Act was how well it was laid out, how easy it was to read, how complete and detailed it was, and everything was transparent. There were no gotchas, so to speak, that you had to find in, you know, tiny little paragraphs of sub-paragraphs to some other paragraph. So, you know, that was refreshing, you know, from my perspective. And the next thing that was very, very striking to me was the focus and detail on public health, which was really not that it was lacking in the prior bills, but it wasn't really defined in much detail. In this bill, it is defined in great detail, where the money's going to come from, where it's going to go to, and it's very expansive in that way. So, and with respect to public health, a lot of us know that public health has been underfunded for a number of years. And in states in particular, you know, regional hospitals, community hospitals have, you know, been closed. So this has now become a very serious problem. And so as a result, I think this bill probably has the most opportunity to really attack that problem with respect to the pandemic that we're in. So the other thing that I would say is, aside from the emphasis on public health and healthcare, really has a tremendous amount of detail with respect to the neediest families and children. The child tax credit, as an example, this is a momentous occasion from that, and we can go into that in much more detail. Focus on education, getting the schools back up and running, and the state and local aid, which has been a sticking point in all of these bills. Interestingly enough, Republicans had, you know, poo-pooed state and local bills, state and local aid, but 425 GOP mayors came out in support of state and local aid, essentially saying that it would enable them to keep basic services up and running that had been decimated during the crisis.
That's so interesting. Two things come to mind while you're talking. One is the last two giant stimulus bills, you and I were very struck, or I was very struck listening to you, at how marginal actual deliverables for public health and for the pandemic were. And there were all kinds of, you know, deliverables to the trough of special interests. And the other thing that we really noticed, especially with the first one you read, was that even though small businesses were getting hardest hit, it was very difficult for small businesses to get any help easily from the other two giant stimulus bills. So I know we try to be nonpartisan, but this is the first stimulus bill of a Democratic administration. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And, you know, where both houses have the upper hand, you know, marginally, but they do. And I think that as a result, what you might consider to be partisan are these healthcare initiatives, subsidies for health insurance, the child, you know, the child credit, family credit, tax credit. You know, so this is a bill that has a heart.
Good to hear that it's easy to follow, because a constant theme of us at Daily Clout in the last two bills really demonstrated this, is that difficulty in understanding it can cover a multitude of sins and special interests. So I'm glad to hear that there's transparency. And lastly, I'm really glad to hear that mayors are coming together across partisan lines to say, look, we really need to look after our people in certain ways. So that's great. So did I interrupt you just now? Was there something
else? No, I just wanted to say one more thing. You know, 71% of Americans say that this stimulus will have an impact on their near-term finances. And this is, by the way, a popular bill. In other polls, you know, the Americans want this stimulus to pass.
Okay, great. Well, let's just march right through it then. I mean, let me ask, is this bill really needed, given that there was $3 trillion already passed? What would you say?
Well, yeah, you know, as a fiscal conservative, I do find this irksome. but on the other hand, I think, as you and I have discussed in past bills, we really are at war. We've had the most significant fall off in economic activity since World War II, 1945. You know, the deficits that we're carrying now are the largest in the last 70 years, only comparing to the Second World War deficits. And people are in pain. You know, what I think is, what I'd like to frame here is that there are many of us who are doing well. We have savings. We are working at tech companies or companies that are able to do well in this environment. But there's millions and millions, tens of millions of families and individuals that are out of work and are desperate, if not bankrupt, and, you know, living hand to mouth or with whatever they can get. You have, you know, food drives and goodness knows what else going on around the country. And this is what I think makes it so difficult for many people to appreciate how desperate the situation really is. This is a reality. So I just have to say that even as a fiscal conservative, I think we have to do this.
Gotcha. So let's get down to the nitty gritty, which is our value add here at Daily Clout. What are some notable inclusions and notable exclusions in this bill from your point of view?
Well, I think the one that is most, cheered for, so to speak, is the child credit. This is something that actually, from my home state, Representative DeLauro, who now chairs the Ways and Means Committee, has been fighting for 20 years. And what a lot of people don't realize is that if you don't owe any taxes, you don't get the child credit.
Right.
You know, so that is a big deal, because it potentially brings over 20 million children out of poverty.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very big deal. It's a one little paragraph in the whole bill, but when you read it and you begin to understand what it's about, it's just incredible. So that's a very big deal. There are health insurance subsidies that really are an add-on to the Health Care Act. And of course, Republicans are rightfully pushing back and saying, "Well, this is a Democrat thing, a liberal inclusion." Well, yes, it is, but healthcare has become unmanageable for most families. So, I thought that was a noteworthy addition. There is an eyebrow raiser. It's an $86 billion funding for bankrupt union pension plans. Mm-hmm. One can go back and forth on this, but I think, again, this bill shows a heart. It's not with any fault of, the people in those pension plans that, the funds are going bankrupt. So I think this is portends to how this administration is going to treat the average American. The focus on public health, I've already talked about. Those are the big things, the state and local aid.
And how about exclusions?
Yeah, corporations. There is nothing in this bill for corporations.
That's a real change. I mean, when you walked me through the other two bills, corporations were making out like bandits.
Yeah, so big corporations don't really get much out of this at all. The small business does get additional aid. And there will be a focus in this bill also on implementation. Right. A new navigator program is being set up, which will presumably help get the funding to small businesses.
Which was so difficult, as we saw in the last two bills. Well, that's exciting. Let me ask you something. How can we possibly afford all of this? Isn't this going to bankrupt the United States? Where's the money coming from?
Well, we have a very friendly Fed, and that is principally where it's going to be coming from. But remember, also,
to people who don't understand the relationship of a friendly Fed to more money to play with.
Yeah. So how this bill will be paid is with more debt. To the nation. There's no question about that. This was passed under a budget reconciliation act. So, in a sense, each of the committees in Congress are asked to reconcile their budgets, so to speak. And so where appropriations are already sitting within those budgets, they can reallocate them to other things. That's partially how this is being done. This will raise our debt to the nation. All told, our spending on COVID-related bills will end up being $5.3 trillion.
I mean, isn't that kind of money we don't have and can't afford to be in debt for?
Totally. It is. It absolutely is. And I think that part of this you can blame on COVID. The other part of it is that as a nation, we have been underinvesting in other things that are very important, like infrastructure. And there is some infrastructure spending in this bill as well in the state and local arena.
One thing I've seen to stay transpartisan is that a lot of Democratic proposed bills or drafted bills tend to allocate a lot of resources pretty systematically to Democratic voters by kind of sector, whether it's unions or urbanites or so on. Is there any sign of that allocation to Democratic voters kind of unfairly or unequally in this bill?
Yeah, so there was some criticism by the Republicans that the state and local spending would unfairly benefit the Democratic run states. When you look at it with various different lenses, that's not really true. Red states, blue states, all of them are hurting. And I think that at the end of the day, Republican states will benefit as much from this bill as Democratic. But I can see where the Republicans get it and where they're criticism is coming from, but the numbers just don't prove it out.
Understood. So what is the budget reconciliation process? It sounds like it's one of those phrases that makes people's eyes glaze over, but it's very important for us to understand it. Did you just explain it, that it's one committee balancing its budget, and if another committee needs the money, they can allocate it, or what is the process? How does it work?
Yeah, so everybody has a target in their committee, and they have to meet the target, you know, so that the you know, the budget can be reconciled. And under House, so that you have one target, $1.9 trillion, whatever it is, and everybody has their individual target to get there.
I see.
And what it does is bypass the, you know, the normal process where you have to get 60 votes and a super majority. You just need a simple majority. Budget reconciliation has become a very partisan vehicle. Mm-hmm. And this is no different, and it's really sort of been tit for tat over the last 20 years, with the Republicans sort of kicking off the using the budget reconciliation process to get through their pet projects, and then, you know, when Democrats have come back in control, they've made changes to the rules so that they could get their pet projects, and on and on. So is this the best way for this to happen? No, absolutely not. You wish that there would be more bipartisan support for a lot of these, these sections of this bill. It is what it is. This is the, you know, divided nation we're in right now.
So you found it pretty interesting to dig into the budget reconciliation process. Thank God, it benefits all that you found it interesting. What are some fun facts you discovered?
Well, I mean, there's, since 1980, there's been 25 reconciliation measures that have gone to the president. 4 bills were vetoed, 21 were enacted. Mm-hmm. And it was primarily used to reduce the deficit through cuts in mandatory spending. So, but in the 2000s, as I was mentioning, the Republican Congresses began to routinely use reconciliation to increase the deficit and enact major tax cuts without offsetting revenue. This happened in 2001, 2003, 2006. And when Democrats took control of the House in 2007, House rules were changed to allow reconciliation to be used only for deficit reduction. But the Republicans again in 2011 disallowed spending increases but permit revenue losses. So this set the stage for them to enact in the 115th Congress the Tax Cut Act, which, you know, interestingly, has been estimated by the Congressional Budget Office to contribute to our deficit of about $1.9 trillion. So, here we are, and, I think this is sort of getting $1.9 trillion back into the hands of the American people versus the corporations. And I think that's another thing that folks need to realize about this bill, is that this is a lot of repair work for past issues. The last recession, the 2007-2008 recession, really hit the most disadvantaged, the least wealthy people the hardest, and they never ever recovered from that, and that continued to contribute to income inequality between the haves and the have-nots. And this is really an attempt to start to grab back from that standing to the middle class and the less advantaged. So I don't know. We could debate so many things in this bill from the right and from the left. And I appreciate all of those viewpoints. It is what it is. You got to start somewhere. I think when we started talking about all of this rescue legislation, I think we initially started talking about how much we were at war at multiple sectors of the economy.
Right. And Can I just ask one more example of how this bill kind of restores resources or access to restore resources for low-income people in the middle class? You mentioned the child tax credit. Is there something else that it does?
Well, we, you know, there will be stimulus payments, and it does cut off higher income, what you might consider higher upper middle income families. So more of this will be focused on lower income families. Rental assistance, mortgage assistance, housing assistance programs, that definitely, I think in the last bill we were saying that, you know, this is half as much as needed.
Right.
So this will go a long way to help families that have fallen way behind and would never be able to pay off their back rent and mortgages and all that sort of thing. The child care, this is a big deal, $39 billion for child care. More than 5 million women have left the workforce because they have to stay at home with their kids as part of the education process. And having child care would help, you know, millions and millions of families.
Jumping in, it'll also help probably millions of women, because most of the people providing child care professionally are women and often lower income.
Yes, and the child care credit actually helps, you know, single moms, you know, more than it does others.
Well, as a former single mom, I have to say thank God someone's thinking about things. Because they rarely appear in legislation except as targets of disdain and judgment.
A little bit of that, yes.
It's exciting to have you describe in detail what's in these bills, and it's really exciting as a citizen to actually be able to understand what the differences are. They're really substantial, and lastly, it's pretty exciting to have you describe what the budget reconciliation process is, because it sounds so boring, but really it's incredibly important in terms of what the final outcome is for ordinary people, right? I mean, yes. Each time these rules were changed, it affected ordinary people. And so it really is important for us to follow how these rules are being changed or changed back, how the process is done, and hold our representatives' feet to the fire if there's a change that we don't approve of. So I can't thank you enough for not only comparing and contrasting these bills, having actually read them, which nobody does. And I just want to stress these bills are hundreds of pages long each. So our debt to you is immense. But also, I really want to thank you for clarifying this process so that everyone can, of course, reach out to their representative, run for office themselves, understand what is actually happening. And, you know, with Charlotte's description now, you can call your representative and say, look, I want this to unfold in the following way, or I don't, and you'll be able to cite chapter and verse because of her breakdown. So is there anything you want to add before we sign off, Charlotte?
Yeah, you know, something that I forgot to mention is that the minimum wage increase did not get into this bill, which I'm sure disappoints probably a number of factions. I expect that to be brought up in future bills. And another thing to emphasize, too, is that the child credit, as big a boom as it is in this bill for 1 year. Only 1 year of funding is established for that. And I do think there will be an effort to, you know, make that a permanent tax credit.
Last question I can't resist. I mean, given how much of a green light the American people are willing to give both parties to allocate trillions of dollars in these emergency stimulus bills, is there any incentive for declaring this emergency over when the numbers show it actually is over?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it's over, Naomi.
Not saying that. I'm just saying going forward. You and I are at this point where I, with my political consulting brain and you know, experience some time ago, think, wow, well, if people can keep passing trillion-dollar bills because it's an emergency, that's an incentive to never end the emergency. And I'm not saying it's not a reason, but there is, I don't get the incentive to not keep it going past the point at which it is a medical emergency.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think we all know that Biden is interested in an infrastructure bill, and we do have an emergency in infrastructure, right. Unfortunately.
Oh, in terms of infrastructure.
Yes, that- yeah. So
we'll move on to other emergencies is what you're suggesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of I'm thinking that, and it probably should, you know, but I think the important thing to recognize is that infrastructure spending is a good thing because it does create jobs, and it improves general economic conditions and makes it easier to do business and all of those things. So you would hope that there would be the revenue add on the other side of that. So in this particular bill, a lot of spending could arguably be said to be infrastructure.
Interesting.
And in the sense that, you know, the $160 billion going to schools and all that sort of includes updates to ventilation systems and upgrades and all that sort of stuff, which were desperately needed and actually were part of the American Civil Engineering Society's report card on America. So there's, you know, we could, you know, look at this in so many different ways, but I think the pandemic spending is done, but I think infrastructure spending will be a new thing that will be brought up in the near future.
Understood. Well, Charlotte Walker, advisor to Daily Clout and gifted entrepreneur and technologist in many other areas, thank you so much for your time and the incredible expertise and patience in informing us that you brought to this project. And we can't wait to talk to you next time.
Thank you, Naomi. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.